Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's call to discuss tariff clarifications, which includes a summary of issues as well as some draft tariff language. My name is Isabella Nicosia, representing ISO Stakeholder Affairs, and I'll be facilitating the web conference today. On the line, I also have our Assistant General Counsel team. So we have Sydney Mannheim, Cindy Jang, Dan Schonkweiler, and David Blotlow. And then we also have a few of our subject matter experts who are also listed under the panelist column. So we have Greg Ford, Karen Vong, Luis Cantos, and Uma Ramanathan on the line as well. We did post the summary of issues and draft tariff language to the miscellaneous stakeholder meetings webpage on the California ISO website, so it is available to you out on that page. Before we get started, I just want to go through a few housekeeping reminders. This call is being recorded. The recording is for informational and convenience purposes only, and any related transcription should not be reprinted without the ISO's permission. Today's meeting is structured to stimulate an honest dialogue and engage different perspectives. And while we always welcome comments and questions, just a reminder to please keep them professional and respectful. And then lastly, please just try to be brief and refrain from repeating what has already been said so that we can manage the time efficiently and make sure we can get through as many questions and comments as possible today. There are some new instructions for how to raise your hand to ask a question in WebEx. So if you are connected to audio through your computer and use the Call Me option, then you can raise your hand by selecting the hand icon, which is located at the top of the chat window on the right-hand side of your screen. But if you dialed in only and did not have the WebEx call you, you'll need to join the queue by pressing #2 on your telephone keypad. And we'll give reminders on these instructions throughout the call today. But if you need technical assistance during the meeting, you can send a chat to the event producer. Her name is Michelle. And just when you ask a question or make a comment, we just remind you to please state your name and organization or affiliation before making your comment. And then again, throughout the call, you can also send a chat message to me if you have a question. You can either send it to Isabella Nicosia or you can send it to CAISO Host. So with that, I am going to pull up the document that we'll be sharing today, and I will hand it over to Sydney just for some opening remarks, and then we'll get started. And Sydney, you might be muted on WebEx.
Okay, I think I unmuted myself from the deadly double mute. This is Sydney Mannheim from the legal department. And before we move through the three topic areas that we have to discuss today, I just wanted to remind everybody, give everybody a little background about what a tariff clarification stakeholder process is all about. We periodically bring forth a variety of changes to our tariff that do not go through our policy initiative process and do not get presented to our board for approval to file. We generally have two types of tariff clarifications, tariff stakeholder processes. One is a kitchen sink sort of approach where we collect various and sundry changes from all over the tariff and appendices. It could be cross-reference changes and typographical errors. And we have a massive cleanup effort to true up the tariff. And occasionally we have more targeted efforts needed to clarify the tariff. These could be gaps that need to be fixed, drafting errors, that sort of thing. In this case, we are in this latter category where we have three different areas where we are making changes and unrelated three unrelated areas where we are making changes to the tariff to conform with either current practices or to true up the tariff to be consistent with approved board policy, and in a third area to conform the tariff to market software and to address inconsistencies in our definitions and in how the market is organized between the day-ahead market and the real-time market, between short-start resources and long-start resources. That is the topic that I will be discussing with you today. Colleagues in the legal department will be discussing the first issue, which is regarding the use of an undefined term business day for certain purposes in Section 11. Cindy Jang, my colleague in the legal department, and David will be handling that topic, and David Slotlow will be handling the topic concerning the addressing a issue that needs to be fixed in the intertie deviation settlement part of Section 11. So unless anybody has any questions about why we are here to look at some proposed tariff changes to address changes in the tariff that we feel we need to be making that will not be going to the board, I'll be handing it off. As a reminder, there is a comment period coming up. So this is just the we're at the point in the process where we're just explaining to you what we're doing, proposing to do, and there'll be a comment period. We'll be responding to those comments down the road, and there'll be opportunity to we'll either have another call if as necessary, depending on what we hear from you in those comments. So if there are any questions, I will respond, and if not, I'll pass it to the call to Cindy. So, operator, are there any questions out there?
I do not currently see any questions in queue. And for those of you who are dialed in on the regular line, you can press #2 to get into the question queue. Otherwise, I don't see any questions from the audience.
Okay, so my colleague Cindy Jang is the first one to speak to you this afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone. Like Cindy said, my name is Cindy, and I'll be talking about the first issue today. So this issue, it affects the payment calendar and settlement timelines, and was brought to our attention through a discussion with a market participant. The discussion revealed an inconsistency between how business day is technically defined in the tariff and our settlement group's longstanding practices. Formally, business day excludes all federally recognized holidays, regardless of the CAISO's operation on that day. Because there are several federal holidays on which the CAISO is open for business as usual, the settlements group has consistently counted these days as business days. For example, since startup in 1998, the CAISO has been open on both Veterans Day and Columbus Day, counting these days as business days for settlements purposes. There's no desire to change this practice. As a result, we propose this change designed to reconcile the inconsistency. The approach we're taking doesn't change the definition of business day in Appendix A of the tariff, because the term is used as defined in multiple other sections. Rather, in just the relevant settlement sections, which are in Section 11, we're highlighting that business day has a slightly different definition by decapitalizing the term and adding clarification language. Additionally, we're proposing to add a list of the affected holidays to the business practice manual in anticipation of any further changes that could happen to federal holidays, such as the addition of Juneteenth this year. This way, we'll be able to adapt without having to make any additional tariff amendments. We're seeking to make these tariff changes in time for the preparation of the 2022 payment calendar. So that is it as the introduction for the business date issue, and I will open it up to any questions out there.
There are currently no questions in queue.
Okay, as a reminder, to raise your hand in Webex, you can select the raise hand icon, which is located just right above the chat window.
We do actually just have one question in queue from Bonnie. Bonnie, your line is unmuted. You may go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is Bonnie Blair. I represent the Six Cities Group. Do you want to take comments or suggestions on the actual proposed language on this call, or do you want to just revert to the comment, written comments later?
Hi, Bonnie. Sure. We can take any comments or suggestions now that you have.
Okay, great. So I have one suggestion. I think this makes complete sense, but I would suggest that in addition to the clarifications that you're proposing, which look fine, that you also amend the defined term business day in Appendix A, essentially to note the distinction between lowercase usage and defined term usage, because somebody who comes across the defined term in looking at a particular segment of the tariff may not get that difference, the difference may not occur to them. And conversely, somebody who looks up, looks to see if there's a definition of business. Well, you've got it covered, I think, in this language that you're proposing, say, for 11.29.7. I mean, you're making that distinction and saying that for this purpose, lowercase business day means, et cetera. But I think it would be helpful to also put that distinction into the defined term so that anybody who looks at the defined term will be tuned into that to that nuance.
Bonnie, we will definitely take that into account and see if we can add a further clarification into the appendix itself between the different.
Great, thanks. I think it'd be helpful.
Do we have any other questions?
I do not see any additional questions in queue.
Okay.
So, David Slotwell will take on the next issue.
Okay. Well, I'll give folks a moment there. Still scrolling down. Okay. So, hi. Good afternoon. So we what I'm here to talk about is a couple small, what we think small, targeted clarifications to the intertie deviations settlement tariff language, which is a something that went into effect relatively recently. It's a new way of assessing penalties for deviations from intertie schedules. These rules, like I said, went into effect relatively recently. There were kind of a couple little tweaks that we realized were probably necessary. So if we could actually just scroll down to the next page, please. And I'll walk through them. Okay. So the first change, what we're talking about here is that the, there's this idea of the enhanced, so part of this is we have an enhanced penalty of 75% when a party accepts an NRTI award in ADS and then doesn't deliver. And so it was drafted to say is not delivered, which sort of is means to suggest that the enhanced penalty would not apply with over deliveries. And that was, you know, I think just unfortunate tariff drafting. You know, there was largely the idea that the, you know, the enhancement would be sort of both directions, both over and under. And you know, like we say in the paper, it was supposed to be symmetrical, and the way it was drafted kind of suggested it wasn't. So that's one change, that the enhanced penalty will not be limited to circumstances of only under delivery, but it will be symmetrical for over and under. So that's the one area of clarification. The second one is, you know, kind of a edge case, really, but it's important in that the enhanced penalty, basically the way the tariff is drafted is, you know, if there is any deviation from what's accepted in ADS from the final tag, then the 75% enhanced penalty will apply rather than 50% penalty. What that doesn't account for is that there could be a scenario where a party has some deviation between ADS and their ultimate tag because of a bona fide reliability curtailment. And so in the policy, we said, you know, you're not going to get charged for non-deliveries of NRTI awards if there's a reliability curtailment from the ISO or another balancing authority area. But there's a scenario where, you know, a party could have, you know, been bumped into the 75% enhanced penalty solely because there was a reliability curtailment. And we kind of give an example in the paper there about how that scenario could happen. So the second area of clarification is to say, look, you know, if the only reason you get bumped into the penalty enhancement is because the deviation between ADS and the tag was because of reliability curtailment, in that case, you're not going to be penalized at the higher level. You still will be penalized if there's some deviation not caused by the reliability curtailment. But if the explanation for why the ADS to tag deviation is solely accounted for by a reliability curtailment, then you only are subject to the 50% penalty. So then the third, and let's scroll down to the next page. The third clarification with the IDS tariff language, is that we have a floor price. So we say, you know, if there's an over or under delivery quantity, you know, which is basically the quantity that's, you know, a deviation from the NRTI award, you know, you have that quantity, it's quantity times price, and that's what your penalty is. So we say that the penalty price is, you know, the 50% or 75% of the LMP, depending on whether you're in the enhancement, but then it's subject to a floor. And so a floor price of at least $10. And what we meant to do, which we did not do and what we're proposing to correct here, is in the enhanced penalty scenario, we did not proportionately scale the penalty floor to be higher. So the way we drafted it was to say there's a $10 floor in both scenarios, and that isn't really right, that the penalty floor under the enhancement should be proportionately higher at $15. And so that's what we're proposing here as well, that the penalty floor under the enhanced penalty is $15 to show that, you know, it's an enhanced penalty. And we go through an example where it could be the case that a scheduling coordinator is bumped into the enhanced penalty, but the way the floor is drafted now, there wouldn't actually be a higher dollar penalty. And that, you know, doesn't really make sense if it's an enhanced penalty, but if the penalty isn't higher, that isn't really what the point was. So those are the three clarifications. I ran through them, hopefully with some, you know, you're able to follow what I was saying. The paper, I think, gets into more detail to sort of explain them. And then, we can take some comments on the, you know, on those clarifications on specific tariff language. And if we can scroll down, I just want to check that I think there was some potentially between different drafts, we might have made an error in the Yeah, okay, can we pause right here? I just want to note, we had some, I think, some internal confusion here. What you see on the screen now, changing the floor from $10 to $15, this draft has it changed in the wrong place, and that's, you know, unfortunate. But I just want to point out, you know, 11.31.2, it sets out that there's a 75% penalty in some cases, 50% in others, and then we change the floor to be $15. We actually, in this draft, the $15 is in the wrong place. Yeah, I think it's highlighted in blue, at least on my screen, where you see there's a $10 error. That's where the edit should be, changing that to $15, not where it's changed in redlining in the draft that was posted. So that's unfortunate. Sorry about that. But I just want to point that out in case that was confusing to anyone. That was just an error. And please excuse the irony of us making a drafting error in a process that's meant to correct drafting errors. But we caught it now. That's not what we will be filing. It will be as I just described. So with that, we can turn it over to any questions.
All right. I do not currently see any questions in queue. Anybody has any
questions? I'm seeing maybe one from Bonnie and one from Dan Williams.
Okay, I see Dan now. Dan, you may go ahead. Your line is unmuted.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, Dan Williams from Customized Energy Solutions. This question might be a bit out of left field, and I apologize for it, but I feel like I have to ask anyway. So on a market update call a couple weeks ago, a market participant voiced some concern that some processes that BPA has as a transmission path operator where they can instruct market participants to reduce their schedules, usually specifically on the COI, due to some changes in the maybe in the line ratings that may then cause those entities to have to incur IDS penalties just because that direction from BPA may not come through as a like qualified operator initiated curtailment per the policy. And my question was just whether there's any room to sort of open up for other addressing other issues that maybe didn't get addressed within the policy process, but nevertheless might fit within kind of the you know, board's direction within the policy, and just, you know, if it's worth market participants making any comments to suggest any other kind of conforming changes or cleanup type of changes in these areas.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't aware. So basically, just to confirm my understanding here, you're saying that there are some cases where the schedules are curtailed, but at least under the current sort of implementation, those aren't flagged as reliability curtailments that are exempt from the IDS charges. And then the question is, should they be? And you know, at least some parties are saying, hey, this is sort of within the spirit of the overall policy, even if it's not, you know, being flagged as a reliability curtailment that's exempt. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's my understanding from the discussion on either the last market update call or the one prior to that just because of the timing for when those instructions come out from the path operator, that they do have to be complied with. Otherwise, the scheduling coordinator could get hit with significant penalties from the transmission provider. But it's not initiated as by the operator as a curtailment, so it doesn't fit within kind of the narrow exemption of that's written into the tariff right now.
Okay. Well, yeah, I wasn't familiar with that issue. So we have not scoped that into what we're doing here. I guess.
Is it something that if entities were to put into comments that you could just maybe consider if it's worth addressing in this round of
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, there's always sort of a little bit of a balance, in this, like it's, with Sydney's opening comments, this is really meant to be clarifications. We're not changing policy. And then, so if the question is, what these curtailments really aren't reliability, but, there's something similar, then it's a question of, is it sort of different enough that it really is a change to the underlying policy versus, just broadening, tariff language to account for something that is in functionally is a reliability curtailment. That's sort of something we'd have to think about. And so I think, maybe putting it in comments would be the best way to kind of see what whether or not we can address it here.
Okay. Thanks. It's just making the comment kind of for the good of the order, and we'll circle back with if I can figure out who it was that made those comments on the market update call. So thank you.
All right. I do not currently see any additional questions in queue.
Okay. If there are no questions in queue, we can move on to our third issue. If we scroll down to the final issue of the day. There we go. We'll stop there. I struggle to find a sensible title for this topic. So I'll start by pointing out that, when the CAISO introduced the RAIM penalties, this was the trigger to notice that our definitions of long start resources and short start resources were not really aligned with each other, and then not really aligned with our market timing of our day ahead and real time markets. As a reminder, the long start resources are not obligated to bid into the real time market if they do not receive a day ahead award. So the definition of a long start resource actually becomes important in terms of whether they have the obligation to not bid in the day ahead if they don't get a day ahead award. So we got some disputes. So some disputes were of the variety, hey, I'm getting RAIM penalties even though my resource is a long start resource, but my resource, it looks like it doesn't really meet the definition of a long start resource, but there's no way the market starts my resource in the real-time market. So I have to submit bids in the real-time market, even though the market software could only start me in the day-ahead market because of my start time and minimum run time. So they had to defensively submit bids in the real-time market to avoid RAIM penalties, even though the market software would never commit them in the real-time market. So if we go down to, can I actually scroll this? And we can scroll down to the definitions, actually, which is at the end of the tariff language. So if you start looking at the definitions of the short start resources and long start resources, we notice that short start resources include startup time and minimum run time, but our definition of long start resources just included startup time, but not minimum run time. So therein lied the serious disconnect
in terms of our definition of the long start resource, and hence the defensive bidding on behalf of resources that were inherently long start resources and treated in our market as long start resources, but didn't meet the definition of long start resources, so they had to submit bids to avoid, you know, rain penalties, even though the intention, of course, was for them not to have that obligation if they didn't get a day ahead award. But our definitions were off track. So if we move down to see, there you go, you see the so our first effort here was, well, let's make sure that we, for whatever definitions that we retain, we would include, the concept of cycle time that would include both startup time plus minimum run time. So we would address that, and we would have long start resources would be those resources that we started in the day ahead market, and short start resources would be started in the real time market, either in STUC or RTUC, based on their actual startup time and minimum run time. Then this led us to the second, the next conclusion is we really didn't need to have a medium start or a fast start because all resources in the real-time market are started in STUC or RTUC based on their times. We do, of course, have resources that have to be startable within 10 minutes because those are our, resources that are non-spin resources, and they're defined as resources that are non-spin, but they're still a subset of short start resources, so they still meet the definition of short start resources. So we went ahead and simplified, removed those tariff definitions and simplify the related tariff sections. And so we have day ahead startable resources and real time startable resources, and define them in terms of their startup time and minimum run time. And fast and short start resources are started in the real time market. And long start resources are started in the day-ahead market, and now rain penalties, so long as we have them, will be those resources that are, in fact, started in the day-ahead market, and if they don't get awarded a day-ahead commitment, they will not have to bid in the real-time market, and the rain penalty, which is tease off a definition, will now tee off a definition that is aligned with the market software. And then finally, Greg Ford, who is one of our students, can speak to this. We did look carefully at the market timing, the specific timelines that were in the tariff relate back to the original MRTU tariff that was filed in 2006 and went into effect in 2009. Since then, we have added numerous market applications and processes over the years. And so the real-time market does take longer to run than back in those days. So the timelines have increased a bit. So we trued up the timelines in the tariff to be consistent with the operation of the market, the real-time market, and the stock and the RTUC. So that is my summary of what we are doing and explanation of how it started, and this will align everything nicely to be consistent with how the market is actually operating, and also remove some unnecessary terms from the tariff. And I will open it for questions from the folks who are listening, and also for my colleague Greg Ford, who worked with me on this.
Do we have any questions in the queue?
I do not currently see any questions in queue. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, you can press on the raise hand icon above the above your chat box to ask a question.
Hey, this is Greg Ford. I see we have a chat question. Which startup time will you use, hot, warm, or cold? I believe the optimization uses whichever one is applicable for the time period. So if the resource is within the, you know, the hot startable range, and then we would use that one. Basically, I'll address what Sydney said too. Currently, the market uses a cycle time, and currently it's set to 270. To answer any questions you might have about why it went to 240, number one is the short-term unit commitment stuck actually doesn't do commitments or decommitments for the last 15-minute interval of its time horizon. And just to kind of back up a little bit further, so the stuck has a time horizon of 4.5 hours, which I believe that's how we get to the 270 minutes. So if you remove that last interval, then you get to 255. And then at some point a few years ago, we had a project to kind of decouple the stuck run from the real-time unit commitment runs. At one time, stuck was actually and real-time unit commitment for one of the hourly runs was actually the same run. When that got decoupled, then there was a we had to develop a means of communication to get information from stuck to the real-time unit commitment. And because of that, that basically took out another 15 minutes. So that's how we got to 240.
Thanks, Greg.
Hi, just one more thing. Yeah, says Tourette says that means a resource can sometimes be short and sometimes be long. You know what? Let me go back and try to get a better. Let me see if it's dynamic or if it's fixed. I don't know how we can get that answer back out again, but yeah, I'll go ahead and try to get that answer at least, and maybe bring it back.
So if there are no more questions on the call, everyone still has the opportunity to submit written questions. And we know we have to get back on that point about the flipping back and forth between, a long and short, the point that was just brought up. And please, we also appreciate if you would submit that in writing, we'd appreciate that. So if there are no more questions, last call for questions, we can go ahead and close the call.
I'll check one more time to see if we have any in the queue.
I do not see any questions in queue. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, pressing the raise hand icon will put you into the question queue.
Okay, well, if we have no other questions, again, you can submit your written comments to initiativecomments@kaiso.com by August 5th, which is next week. Thank you all for joining us today, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.
That concludes our conference. Thank you for using event services. You may now disconnect.